Chapter 20. Walking towards Crucible, Vesper has a view of the devastation. Large parts of the field have collapsed, exposing bare roots and building foundations, like a bottom lip pulled away from old teeth. The makeshift wall has been obliterated, only a few bumps in the earth suggesting what was there the day before, and only two of the bunkers remain intact, the others broken or smoking or both. Amidst the wreckage, wounded are found, dug out, and helped to safety. Meanwhile, the trade for scarce medical supplies has already begun, a new kind of war, with very different rules. As she gets closer, she sees the Empire's forces slumped together, bound and watched over, their guards angry, hurt, looking for an excuse to lash out, to make the prisoners pay. "Listen," says Vesper, making everyone turn to her. "You came here to receive my protection, and you have it. Now, the people who have surrendered their arms are also under my protection." Assent is given, the potential for violence receding. Vesper and the Vagrant continue, not stopping until they stand where the wall used to be. The fighting has been heavy, brutal, explosives employed to devastating effect. New craters pepper the ground, the largest made by a fallen skyship, the impact so severe that only shreds of wreckage remain. She sees a usurperkin limping towards her, is aware of the way the Vagrant tenses at her side. The figure is familiar, but she cannot place him. Strange, she thinks. She is usually good with names. The usurperkin wears a tattered marshal's uniform, one of those favoured in verdigris. There is dried blood in his ears that has run down, staining both sides of his neck. "You're one of Tough Call's people, aren't you?"
"Yeah. I'm Max."
"Are you hurt?" He looks surprised at her question.
"Yeah, but this ain't about me."
He clears his throat, as if about to say something important, the effect spoiled slightly by his inability to meet her eye.
"We wanted you to know that the boss held the wall. Those Empire bastards didn't get through."
"Then I owe you and Tough Call my thanks."
"Not a one of them,"
he continues.
"They piled it on thick, and she stood right there with us. When she ran out of rockets, she used a knife, and when that broke, she used her fist, and when that broke..."
Max shakes his head.
"We wanted you to know what she did. We want you to tell the others."
Vesper rests a hand on his forearm. "I will, Max. You have my word." She squeezes, then asks, "Where is she? I'd like to see her." Max leads her back to the dome. The Vagrant follows as far as the entrance, but then splits off, hurrying towards another section while she and Max go to the rooms allocated for verdigris. There are new cracks in Crucible's walls, a few shards of daylight getting in where they shouldn't. One falls across Tough Call's face. There are others here. A usurperkin called Maxi, covered in bandages, who wipes at her eyes, and Eze, who for once appears humble. Vesper nods to them and goes to Tough Call's side. Most of the woman's body is covered, giving the impression of someone merely sleeping. Leaning down, Vesper whispers goodbye. A few ratbred have returned to the dome already, setting their rooms to rights. They tense at the sound of the Vagrant's boots hurrying down the corridor. He gives them apologetic waves as he passes, moving on before any questions can start. One door is passed by, then another. He goes through the third one, ducking late, the hangings pulling at his hair. A few strides take him to a cabinet. He crouches down, pulls open the door. Inside are some folded clothes, rumpled by the indentation of a small bottom, and nothing else. The vagrant's hand goes to his mouth. He stands up, checks the back of the cabinet. Nothing. A quick glance round the room reveals plenty of ornaments, all shiny or studded with glass. Many are on their sides. Not one of them looks like Rila. He runs over to the rug, still folded over, and looks down the hole. Nothing. Hand still pressed to mouth, he stands there, his face caught in an expression somewhere between intense thought and panic. Behind him, there is a soft giggle. The vagrant's eyebrows shoot up. He nods to himself, the worry lines easing, then turns to his left until he faces in the opposite direction. Nobody is in sight. He scratches his head and gives an exaggerated sigh. There is another giggle behind him, stifled, louder. He turns again, faster this time, catching a glimpse of hair trailing off to his left and the bottom of a foot raised in flight. Another sigh and he tilts left before turning right, catching a naughty-faced Rila in the act. He shakes his head at her, but is usurped by his own smile. She smiles back, cheeky, and he shakes his head again, at himself, before sweeping her into an embrace. They cluster in Vesper's room. The vagrant, Jem, Samael, and Vesper. Rila has been put next door with Scout, and the sounds of running feet and happy barks form an incongruous underscore for the otherwise grim proceedings. "I need to know the state of things before I speak to everyone," says Vesper. With difficulty, she adds, "I've already seen Tough Call." For once, Samael's whispery tones are appropriate.
"The Thousand Nails have taken heavy losses, and over half the survivors are wounded or suffering essence poisoning. I will help those I can, but they are not what they were. The West Drift delegation was hit worst. Their leaders are dead, their numbers decimated."
"What about New Horizon, Red Rails, the Order of the Broken Blades? And where is Genna?"
The vagrant looks up at the name. He catches Vesper's eye and shakes his head. She seems to deflate a little.
"Oh. Sorry, he's been with me so long, I thought. Do you know where his body is? I'd like to see him, if there's time."
The vagrant looks away.
"New Horizon is still with us," says Samael. "I don't know exactly how they fared, but the man-shape seems happy. Without their support, the Empire would have killed us from the inside. The rat-bred of Red Rails didn't get involved in the fighting, but their tunnels allowed us to bring the fight to the Empire."
"I see. What about the Order?"
"We remain, but the Necroblades are unworthy."
Samael lowers his head.
"I failed you, and I failed them. I'm sorry."
"No, Samael. If anyone failed here, it's me. Please, look up. This isn't over, and with Genna gone, I need you to be strong, now more than ever."
He meets her eye.
"I am yours to command."
"Good. Anything else?"
"There were civilian casualties. Although the Empire's main attack was held at the wall, a smaller force were dropped in at the start of the battle."
The sword hums softly at Vesper's side.
"They came to me for protection."
There is a pause, awkward, and then she adds,
"How have people taken it?"
A few have fled, most have stayed, a large number have asked to fight.
Then we need to give them weapons. Tell Gorad and Gutpumper to see it done. We can worry about compensation for Slake when all of this is behind us. Is that it? Good. Samael, convene a meeting of the delegates. The rest of the seven are only hours away, and we need to be ready.
As the group breaks up and Vesper starts for the door, Jem approaches, tentative.
You're not actually going to fight them, are you?
An eye regards him, incredulous.
Of course I am. There's no other choice now.
I know there has to be a battle. What I'm asking is, do you have to be at the head of it? You've been asking about everyone else, but what about you? Those people out there, they don't care about you. They just care about themselves.
He makes a vague gesture in her direction, his hand not quite touching hers.
Haven't you given enough already? I'm not doing this because I want to. I'm doing it because I have to. There's no one else, Jem. Just me. I made this happen, and I have to see it through to the end.
But what if there's nothing left of you at the end?
Vesper closes her eyes.
This isn't the time.
She knows this will anger him, keeps talking to smother the argument before it gets going.
Look, I can't fight the Seven and you at the same time. Help me. Keep yourself and Rela safe. When this is over, we can talk.
This will never be over.
He looks at her, pained by what he sees. He steps aside.
We'll talk after the battle, I promise.
Jem bites back a reply. The taste of it lingers in his mouth, bitter, long after she has gone. The buck wanders the grasses on the far side of Crucible, keeping well clear of the people and their grim business. Terrors of the previous night are already forgotten, the suns as warm as they ever were, pleasant on his back. A questing bleat catches his attention. It is the doe. At the sight of her, four legs freeze in place and his jaw locks. Calling to her drives her away, so he does not do that. Chasing her drives her away, so he does not do that either. The buck has no idea what to do, and so he stands, rigid, his eyes on hers. Slowly she approaches, pausing sometimes to behead a nearby flower, her eyes flicking to his as she does so. The buck sways, eyelids flickering, vision suddenly blurry. Somehow he manages not to faint. She bleats again, a call for attention already received, and trots closer until her head is inches from his. The buck does not move, holding his breath, keeping his body still. Those final inches fall away slowly, a bearded mouth brushing his cheek. Blissfully, the buck closes his eyes. She nuzzles him a second time, more firmly, and it is suddenly too much. He opens his mouth, bellowing joy. The doe leaps straight up. Several birds fly away. Not long after, the buck is alone again. He hangs his head, making a series of low bleats, miserable. Vesper walks out to the central space. Above and around her, the delegations quieten, as much through shock as respect. By now they have all heard rumours about her injuries and recovery, but for many this is the first time they have actually seen her. The Infernals lean away from the silvery essence running through her like flaming mercury. The humans, seeing nothing but the physical, wonder how she still walks. All present are attentive, waiting for her to speak. Since the battle, there has been a new kind of respect for her. No longer just a diplomat or sword carrier, or the one that allegedly closed a distant breach. She has been transformed into something other, a figurehead, a legend, a thing they can no longer fully relate to. They are in awe of her. A memory comes to Vesper of the shining city and the sea of reverent faces at the steps of the Seven Sanctum, and with it a feeling of terrible loneliness. She looks up at the various delegations. Savmir and his ratbred appear ruffled, nervous. Eze sits uneasily in the space left by Tuff Call, Max and Maxie just as uneasy at his side. West Rift's section is poorly populated, and the First's box remains empty. Flathead seems propped up in her chair, chin resting heavy on her fist. Only Slake's painted delegates and the man-shape seem unchanged. "Last night," she says, "you did the impossible. You stood against the Empire of the Winged Eye, and you won. They came at us with their war machines and their soldiers when we were least ready, and you did not fail. The cost was high." She takes a moment to look at each group in turn. "It was too high. Our worlds will never be the same again. But we won. A lot of us were strangers to each other, but we fought side by side, and we won." She lets the positive note fade away. "I wish I could say the battle was over, but it isn't. Alpha's Sky Palace is coming. It will be here before midday." They all know this, but her words bring the reality home a second time. Heads shake, and dark words are exchanged. Vesper holds up a hand, and they fall quiet again. "Listen to me. They say that no one has ever stood in battle against the Seven and survived. Maybe that's true." There is another rumble of unhappiness that cuts off as she continues. "But the Seven no longer exist. Gamma and Delta are with us. The bulk of their army has fallen. We can do this. Together." At some unseen signal, Gorad and Gutpumper lean forward.
"Gutpumper was wondering about that army," says Gorad.
"Yes," agrees Gutpumper. "That Empire army we're looking after."
Gorad nods.
"Why haven't we killed them? Be safer to. Much cheaper to kill them than to feed them."
"Hard to tame," murmurs Gutpumper.
The man-shape raises a hand, indicating that it would like to speak. At Vesper's nod, it begins.
"I, too, have thought about this problem, and I have a solution that will save resources and be of benefit to all sides. Give them over to us."
"What would you do with them?" asks Vesper.
"Repurpose them, as we would our own after a defeat."
Vesper looks hard at the man-shape, then at each of the other delegates. "Is this really what you want? I thought we were here to do things differently than before." She draws herself straight. "I didn't order those people restrained just so I could kill them later. I did it because there's more than one way to defeat an enemy, and there's more than one way for us to live our lives." Eze clears his throat.
"Great lady, Eze hears you and is struck by the vision of your splendid words, but many of us are unworthy of the greatness. We are more interested to be living and having enjoyment of the food."
"Who will watch them?"
asks Savmir.
"Cannot fight and watch. Cannot split our fighters. Too many enemy as it is."
"This won't be like last time," replies Vesper. Those too injured to fight, but well enough to hold a weapon, will watch the prisoners. Alpha's Sky Palace can't be fought like a regular army base that's on the ground. It doesn't matter that there are more of us. They'll just glide overhead and bomb us out of existence. To bring our numbers to bear, we need to bring them down to our level. In order to do that, we're going to need to get people up and into the palace. We have the First's remaining skyships in addition to the ones the Empire surrendered. We'll pack them with our finest and use them to board the palace in multiple locations. If we're fast, we can force them down, allowing the bulk of our army to attack. She gives them a moment to take it in. I'd prefer to take volunteers for the raid. The casualties will be high.
Where will you find pilots for the extra ships?
Asks Gorad.
And how will you stop the Empire ships locking down?
Asks Gutpumper. The Empire's skyships won't lock down because it will be the original crew piloting them. She hears a mutter, perhaps from the West Rift box. So much for volunteers. They have already volunteered. It seems we are not the only ones to doubt the Seven's wisdom.
Can we trust enemy?
Asks Savmir. They cannot lie to me, replies Vesper. The irony of her own lie does not escape her. While it is true that the Empire's pilots are willing now, it was not so before their meeting with Delta. Vesper keeps this detail to herself, another smudge on the window of her dream.
Are you going, Vesper?
Asks the man-shape. Without hesitation, she raises her head. Of course. I wouldn't ask people to go if I weren't willing to myself.
I am confused. You know that the Seven will sense the malice. They will come for you.
I'm counting on it. While they are trying to bring me down, it will free the rest of the raiding party to complete the mission. The man-shape remains unconvinced.
What if you get shot from the sky before you land? What hope will the mission have then?
There's going to be more than one lure. Delta is going up too, and I was hoping you would join us. Your presence will draw them just as fast as mine. Everyone turns to the man-shape's shadowed head, waiting for it to answer.
No, it says at last. I am here seeking life, not death. However, I will send Gutter Shamble and the Faceless Prince in my place.
Was that comment aimed at me? She wonders. Am I seeking death? The sword begins to hum in her hand. It takes her a moment to realize it is not reacting to her. Frowning, she closes her eyes, giving herself over to it. As she concentrates, she becomes aware of a slight vibration in the floor, like the purr of the earth. The sword pulls at her, drawn by something outside the dome. She is not the only one disturbed. More and more of the delegates sense the tremors now, some reaching for weapons out of habit, others moving for the exit. The man-shape and the other infernals are first to the doors, moving with the speed of those that know something the others do not. In a matter of minutes, the dome empties. Vesper is the last to leave, moving with a more measured pace than the others. She is weary rather than afraid, resigned as much as ready. Beneath her feet, the ground trembles, regular, the heartbeat of a giant, louder, closer. Squeezing the hilt of the sword, Vesper goes outside to meet it. Delta of the Seven turns away from the rising sun and her approaching brothers and sisters in the sky, her gaze going towards the new arrival. Above, Alpha's palace pauses, five silver figures moving to the same side of the battlements. In Crucible, people rush to high ground. Those with scopes and vision enhancers employ them. Those without squint. The Infernals sense it before they can see it, the coming of one of their own. Not since the time of the Uncivil or the Usurper have they felt such power. It is fear-making, thrilling, and they are drawn to watch like flies to fire. And there is plenty for the humans to see, too. A shape is materializing, visible despite the distance. Familiar, bizarre, moving in a way that shocks the brain. Someone shouts, voicing the thought they all have, lending credence to the impossible sight.
It's Wonderland!
Others agree, the word spreading from group to group. For it is Wonderland, but transformed. No longer simply a city, it has become a living creature, the towers like rows of spines on its back. It moves on a skirt of rippling bone, hundreds of giant vertebrae flexing together to give the city a gliding, almost graceful approach. Lights sparkle on towers, on walls, thick studs of them making a belt of jewels between the bone skirt and city gates. They are a riot of colours, joyous, each one lovingly restored. Such is the majesty of it all that for a while all anyone can do is watch. Then Delta returns to her vigil. Scopes and eyes across Crucible return to the sky, and Alpha's Sky Palace rotates towards the new threat, Wonderland. Vesper finds her way to Samael's side.
It's the first, isn't it?
Yes, the half-breed replies. It is complete again. Wonderland is its shell now. That was the Uncivil's dream, but she was destroyed before it was complete. Now Nia has seen it through.
With your help?
Yes, with my help. And the first's.
She nods, realizing that Samael has known about this for some time. She quickly puts away any anger at being kept in the dark, focusing on the needs of the moment.
This is it, Samael. This is our chance.
Scramble the skyships.
Yes,
he says, but does not move.
If you have something to say, there's no time to be shy.
I wish to volunteer for the raid.
Vesper shakes her head.
I'm sorry, but I need you on the ground. If all goes well, we'll meet in the palace somewhere. And Samael, she adds. If something happens to me, I'm relying on you to hold this together. I'm sorry to lay another burden on you, but you're the only other one that can get the Infernals and humans to listen.
I hope it doesn't come to that.
Me too. Now go. We need to make this count.
While skyships are prepped and run through last-minute checks, Vesper jogs to the edge of Crucible, raising the sword and singing softly. There is an answering cry, and soon after she is rewarded by the sight of Delta flying back towards her. It is almost time to go, and there are too many goodbyes. In a way, she is glad. The vagrant strides through the throngs of rushing people to stand before her. They look at each other, condensing a lifetime of feelings, of things said and unsaid, into a nod. A strange movement in her periphery draws her attention from him. Gutter Shamble and the Faceless Prince are making their way onto a waiting skyship, two mashed corpses shuffling towards a second end. The sight repulses her. She wonders if there is anything left of gutter face, the infernal they were made from, and if they are even still capable of independent thought. There are hints in the wrecked figures of something greater, but they are hard to find. After a moment, her eyes travel to the sword. Are they any different to me? The sword has little sympathy for such thoughts, glaring at her until they are burnt away, leaving her focused again. She looks up as Delta lands.
Ready?
She asks. The reply is whispered, as much felt on the ears as heard.
I do not want to face Alpha again. I am afraid.
The mention of Alpha's name does not make Vesper feel afraid. If anything, she and the sword feel a frustration that slides into anger, tinged with disappointment.
Dig deep. Don't let the fear win. And remember, you're not alone. I'll see you up there. Okay.
Delta assents, and Vesper runs to another skyship, jumping in without hesitation. From the open hatch, Mazar shouts that they are ready to fly. The vagrant starts to climb in, beckoning Delta to follow. But she does not. She is thinking of the last time she met her brother, Alpha. Her essence remains bruised by his anger, throbbing at the recollection. She wishes there was something to cling to and looks at her hands. They are empty, only dark smudges on her palms where once she held a coat. The other skyships are nearly loaded. It is important that they all leave together to have the biggest chance of success. Delta knows this, but cannot bring herself to go in. Vesper says that she is not alone, but in this moment, Delta feels more alone than ever before. She is estranged from her brothers and sisters, adrift, and her purpose is unclear. Even her sword feels wrong to her now. Engines rise in pitch, ready, urging her to hurry. And then it strikes her. There is something that would bring comfort. She leaps up, soaring towards the dome. In seconds she has flown through one of the larger cracks and is gliding down an empty corridor. She stops at a room, ducking through the doorway. A man called Jem stands up. He sees her hand, beckoning, and goes to say something that Delta does not want to hear. Her essence ripples out.
How dare he?
She wants such a little thing.
It is not his place to pass judgment.
A single look is all it takes for Jem to close his tainted mouth and step away, to keep stepping away, mindless, until his back hits the wall. Once more she looks to Rila, and the girl comes, a small hand snaring one of her silver fingers. At the contact, Delta feels the tension ease slightly.
Now I am ready.